This is Jaguars Postgame, presented by Baptist Health System, GEICO, Rouse Chiropractic Clinic, and by EverBank. Stand by for highlights and the best analysis of today's Jaguars game. We go back to the broadcast booth. Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, a familiar theme in our postgame show, Jaguars missing opportunities and losing. 7 in a row this season, 12 in a row going back to last year, and the building project continues. But Tony, you said it before we signed off the game broadcast, and that is you didn't think it would be like this today.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. You know, I thought the team would come out and play better. I thought the offense had taken a huge step the last couple weeks with Blackman back. You got Cecil. We found out he was going to be able to play this week. You got Mercedes Lewis back. You know, an offensive line, the same group that's now played for their third straight game together against a defense that didn't have anyone scared you. I mean, come on. I mean, you should be able to take advantage of some stuff. They're a good blitzing team. And it was just a game that, from the start, you know, Phillip Rivers takes him down, marches it right down their throat. The Jaguars come out, get a couple big plays. They're driving. They're down there deep in the pretty, you know, on the doorsteps of the red zone.
Sack.
Two sacks takes them out. They have to punt. And then the next drive, you got 3rd and 30. Okay, good. We're going to get the ball back. We can do something.
Down 7-0. The game was very much in doubt.
Offense is moving the ball. You got some confidence. We'll be able to do it. Unsportsmanlike. And from that point on, you can actually feel, and I said it back then, like the wind had been just taken from
the
sails,
and
the air out of the balloon just sucked right out the life of the team.
And, well, and you know, the Jaguars,
it was just never the same.
The Jaguars had a similar opportunity last week to get Peyton Manning off the field in the first half, down 7-0. And instead, Andre Branch. You know, the play was long over. They were trying to get everybody off to the sideline, and then he just throws his hand at a guy's helmet and gets it. And, you know, those are Peyton Manning gets a first down and gets a touchdown last week. I mean, it just, you just keep seeing some of the similar things over and over and over, whether it's the penalties or the interceptions or the balls batted at the line of scrimmage or the missed blocks or the routes that are run wrong or the drop passes off their hands. I mean, it's just error after error after error. And I'm not saying the Jaguars would have won 3 or 4 or 5 ball games, but they might have won 1 or 2, or they would have performed at a higher level with just a couple of plays working. You know, just a couple.
Get in the end zone.
Don't look at me, big boy.
No, I'm just saying, but I mean, there's a little. And
that makes a big difference, yeah. A huge difference.
I go back to, we all believed, and they did. They were getting better, and I had the sense coming into today that they were going to take another step forward, and that if they built on what they did last week, both offensively and defensively, this would be a very competitive game that would go down into the fourth quarter and would be decided late, and it just didn't happen. And now you look at the situation. You got to get on a plane tomorrow to go to London, which is not the shortest trip in the world. And you go play a team in the San Francisco 49ers that are arguably one of the best teams in the NFC. I mean, it just does not get any easier. And you can't afford to make mistakes and not take advantage of opportunities if you're this team. But that's what they continue to do.
All right, let me give you the numbers here for the Jaguars. 353 yards of offense, 275 from the passing attack, only 78 on the ground. Henny finishes 23 of 36, 318 yards, and one interception. His passer rating, 80.6. His top target today, Mike Brown, the second-year quarterback turned wide receiver, undrafted a year ago, 5 for 120, and has had a couple of good performances since returning from injury himself. Cecil had 8 for 80, but most notably dropped the ball in the end zone there on that last drive that it was thrown point blank. But give him credit, playing injured today, he couldn't have felt comfortable. Justin Blackman, a week after making 14 catches, was blanketed in coverage a lot, 6 for 58. Mercedes Lewis in his longest stretch on the field this year, a 31-yard catch on the first series, then never got the ball again. Maurice had 2 for 19, and Forsett had 1 for 10. The ground game, 78 yards today, 9 for 37, a 4.1 per carry average from Maurice Jones-Drew, but they just couldn't keep feeding the ball because they fell behind. Forsett had 2 for 19. Denard Robinson had one good hard run for a first down for 9 yards, and that's about that. Jaguars only had the ball for 22 minutes and 30 seconds, and they had the one turnover today, and they fall back to -7 on the season in that takeaway-giveaway ratio. 6 sacks today. Jaguars, as we mentioned, 6 sacks.
That's just not very good.
Yeah. Jared Johnson and Donald Butler, two of their best defenders, not even on the field, not to mention Freeney or Ingram. And so from that perspective, It clearly was a problem today for Cam Bradfield playing out at left tackle, where it seemed most of the pressure came. And then six penalties for 45 yards, and none of them were bigger than the 15-yard penalty on Sendarik Marks at a moment in the ball game in the second quarter where the Jaguars had the Chargers sitting and looking at third and forever. I'm sorry, it was in the first quarter. Third down and at least 30, and, well, that was a boneheaded play. For the Chargers, Phillip Rivers was excellent today. 434 yards of offense, 276 from their passing attack, and 158 on the ground. Rivers, you ready for this? 22 of 26. That is Brady or Manning-like. 285 yards and a touchdown, 125.2 passer rating, and I'm not sure if that passer rating tells just how good he was. He just was flawless in his execution and moved the ball all around, took what the Jaguars gave him, and made points, made it happen. Eddie Royal led the Chargers with four receptions, and he had 69 yards and a touchdown. Keenan Allen had three for 67. Wood had put four for 47. Antonio Gates, six for a very quiet 31, but he moved the chains several times. The leading rusher for the Chargers was Ryan Matthews, over 100 for the second time in as many weeks, 21 for 110. That's a 5.2 per carry average and a touchdown. Danny Wood had added nine carries for 29 yards. He scored a touchdown as well. Eight penalties for the Chargers, but they controlled the ball for 37 minutes and 30 seconds, and the Jaguars only got to Phillip Rivers and got him on the ground once today. So there are the numbers for you.
Well, and give the San Diego Chargers some credit. That's back-to-back weeks. They did against the Colts. They did against the Jaguars. So they completely dominated the time of possession and kept the opposing quarterbacks, in this case, Andrew Luck last week, on the sidelines and helped their defense out, kept them fresh. Defense returned the favor. Very low-scoring games for both the efforts by both the Jaguars and the Colts. And this Chargers team, listen, they're very, very efficient. Nothing that scares you. No, like, real huge play threats.
But that goes to show you
they just make plays.
What a quarterback can do. The value of the quarterback. And the Jaguars just they couldn't get anything going consistently. I mean, you want to look at a stat that tells the number about as well as anything. The Jaguars came into the game today converting on third down. In other words, keeping drives alive at 29%. Today, 3 of 11.
And that's a money down. That's where your quarterback
charges 7 of 12.
Well, quarterback's so big on third down.
You bet.
It's a money down.
And Gates, I mean, he may not run by people like he once did.
He gets open.
Well, and he just kind of so subtle, and he just lays out there. And then you got Danny Woodhead, who seemed to always have a play in him. Just again, not a 74-yard touchdown run or an 87-yard completion, but just enough to move the chains and keep him moving. And that was the story from the numbers perspective. And Phillip Rivers leads the Chargers to their fourth win of the year, and in the process hands the Jaguars their seventh loss of the year, 0-7 for the first time in franchise history. And, you know, we'll say it again. You've heard it all season long, and you'll hear it throughout the rest of the season. This is a build. I mean, this is a start from scratch, build this thing up. But, again, we thought the Jaguars would come out today and give us a better showing based on what we had seen the last 2 weeks. So if you're Gus Bradley and defensive coordinator Bob Babbage, what's your approach up front? It's not like you can wholesale change much out. I mean, they got beat off the ball today. They got beat off the ball today. Let's take a break. We're hoping to catch up with Gus Bradley here when we return from this timeout on Jaguars Radio. Well, we've run through the numbers for you, and that was our Comcast Business final fast stats check. Our broadcast through the postgame brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. An injury report presented by Baptist Health System, changing healthcare for good. Jeff will talk to Gus about this in just a couple of minutes, but, you know, the Jaguars really didn't get too banged up today, Tony. They just didn't seem like anybody that was hurt re-injured it, and didn't seem like there were any new injuries.
No, nothing major. We saw Grotz out there a little bit. Blackman got most of the time at the corner position that he took over once Dwayne Grotz had the injury, the high ankle sprain, but Grotz got some playing time, which was good to see him out there. And I actually don't recall Mike Ryan or the trainer for the Jaguars and doctors coming out at all.
There was a moment where it looked like Will Rackley and Maurice
Jones-Drew.
Yeah, they were fine. Turned out they were okay. So let's hear from the head coach, who is with Jeff Loggeman outside the Jaguars locker room. Jeff?
All right, thank you, Brian. Gus, certainly not a lot of opportunities. The San Diego Chargers controlled the clock and really possessed the ball pretty much throughout the game.
Well, I think, first of all, I give them a lot of credit. They traveled all the way across the United States, and they showed up. And we did not. And I think that's what's disappointing. I think, you know, we're a team that plays with effort and spirit, And we did not do that today. And we had, you know, as they say, one of those days. And we got to own up to it. And, you know, we talk about getting better. Well, today we didn't.
The penalty by Senderic, and then the failure for the booth to review that play, I thought certainly took the wind out of the sails of your team.
Yeah, there was a little bit of confusion. But the penalty with Senderic, you know, this 2 weeks now and in critical situations. And we have to figure it out. And, you know, we're not playing smart right now. And it was in time, at times, it appears selfish, even though that's not his personality, the act itself is. And we got to take that out of our team.
2 weeks, what many people thought was improvement. How do you get back on that track?
Well, this was a challenge, you know, to play, you know, last week where we played with good spirit and good effort. And then that's what we talked this week. The challenge is to do it again. And we didn't. So I think that it really surfaced. I think our players recognize it, and it doesn't feel good. Today does not feel good to anybody in our locker room. And so we got to refocus and go back after the challenge and regroup.
Any injuries to report?
I have not heard any up to this point.
All right. Thank you, Gus.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that's head coach Gus Bradley. As we anticipated, nothing on the Baptist Health injury update. Want to let you know that we really appreciate the folks at Bud Light for their sponsorship of the Bud Play of the Game. We don't have one this week. You know, I mean, congratulations to Josh Scobie. Hit two field goals, hit 200 for his career, 6 points, but there is not a Bud Light play of the game from this one. You heard the head coach say basically the same thing. But it is brought to you in every postgame show by Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go.
Was that, maybe it's just me, so correct me if I'm wrong, was that the most discouraged we've heard Gus Bradley in his postgame comments?
We haven't
this
heard.
Season? But is this that was the most discouraged in his voice?
Well, I don't know.
I picked up.
I haven't heard discouragement from him at any point, so I don't know whether that's discouragement or disgust.
And whatever it is. Yeah. I'm saying the most perturbed.
Yes.
Whatever adjective you want to – maybe not
– but I still don't think you're going to see the foundation that he's trying to lay.
He's not going to change.
No
I'm just
way.
Saying. But that post-game remarks was the most disappointed. Maybe that's the way
– there's no doubt.
That I sensed listening to Gus Bradley talk to us so
you're
far.
You're probably going to hear that in the voice of this next gentleman who
I
is with Jeff.
It.
It's Maurice Jones-Drew. Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Brian. I'm Maurice. I mean, last 2 weeks you guys seemed to get better as a team, and today it didn't appear that. In fact, it looked like you guys may have taken a step back. Is that what you thought?
I mean, that's what it seemed like. We really didn't go out there and play with a lot of energy. Credit to San Diego. They did a great job coming out, holding the ball in the first half. And converting on third downs, and as an offense, we got to continue to go out and not put together a drive and finish. So we really didn't play well at all as a team, and we just got to come back tomorrow and figure it out and get ready to go to London.
Having played what many people thought was pretty well in Denver and the London trip tomorrow, does that distract the team at all?
No, not. We have to be professionals about it, understand. We got to take the criticism. Take the criticism tomorrow and then understand that we're going to go against a team in San Francisco and understand how we can get better and then how we can go out and attack them.
All right. Thank you, Maurice.
No problem.
Maurice Jones-Drew averaged 4.1 per carry, though he only carried the ball 9 times today. Did have an 11-yard run. We were worried for a moment that his foot got caught in a pile and that it was going to be a problem for him, but he did return to the game. The Jaguars simply, as they have most of the year, fallen behind, had to abandon the run and throw to play catch-up. It's been the story of the season for Maurice Jones-Drew in that running attack.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to call the run when you're down like they are. And the way that Philip Rivers is controlling the clock and keeping you off the field, he limits your opportunities because defensively you can't get the stop. So all of a sudden you're Jed Fish. You want to run the ball. You want to run the ball, but you get put in some positions that make it very difficult to do that. And most of the third and fourth quarter, you find yourself in such a deficit that you got to throw it around and try to get back in the game.
Well, the Jaguars couldn't run the ball today, and they didn't stop it either. Ryan Matthews had 110 yards, and Jeff has Roy Miller to talk about that.
All right, thank you, Brian. Roy, defensively, the Chargers able to control the clock throughout the game. How do you change that to where you guys can start giving the ball back to your offense?
You know what? We really just got to get on the same page. We got to quit taking turns making mistakes. That's really what you see. You know, you just see different fits getting messed up. And, it's just we got to do a better job as players doing that.
The Chargers had some injuries along the offensive line. Did a little bit of a scramble moving guys around. Thought you guys would be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, no doubt. we seen that, and you know, we knew we had to. You know, they changed up a little bit what they did in the second half, and you know, it just we just weren't able to stop it. And like I said, I mean, you watch the film; everybody takes turns, making mistakes. You can't win like that. You know, we got to be more consistent. You know, just as a team.
All right, thank you, Roy.
Yep.
There's Roy Miller. I mean, you can hear in his voice. And you know, the next question, if we had time for it, was going to be, what do you say to these guys who go out and lose their minds and get 15-yard penalties at inopportune times?
Well, you got to just tell them. You just got to say, we can't do that. I mean, Gus is going to address it. He already did with us. And as players, you're frustrated with it. You know, it's always a fine line. You want to play with emotion. You want to play with passion and energy. But you got to understand where you are at the where you are in the play, where you are at in the game, and you just can't make silly mistakes.
All right, time to name our Bueller Swiss Watch MVP. Bueller Swiss is the official watch of the Jaguars, and you can get your Bueller Swiss at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Park Jewelers in Lake Mary, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, the Cranford Jewelry folks in Moultrie, Georgia, and Hope Jewelers here in Jacksonville. Loggy, Tony, what or who do you nominate for the Bueller Swiss Watch MVP?
Well, Brian, I just gave it to Brad. I mean, 200 games played in career, only the 61st offensive lineman to do it in league history. Really, I mean, where else are you going to go? I mean, Mike Brown maybe, but I mean, Brad, what a tremendous accomplishment. What a tremendous career he's having.
I can't imagine that Tony would have any argument
with
that one.
Nope, that's who I'd give it to as well.
All right, Logs, any more general thoughts from the locker room?
Whew, how about that?
All right, there you go. Working it today. Logs, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Okay.
That's Jeff Longman signing off. Any final thoughts from you?
Well, we got a long trip tomorrow, and this
yes, we do.
Got to get on the plane, go to London. It'll be an interesting week out there as we'll be there for all the festivities of the NFL. This team, though, has to focus. They got a big, big task in front of them. San Francisco 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, that defense. Frank Gore, Vernon Davis, a tough physical. I mean, you want to talk about a team that's going to try to run it right down your throats. They'll turn on this film, and that's what they'll take. They'll get the game plan from, and the Jaguars can expect a lot of Frank Gore, and they got to get ready to defend it.
All right. Yeah, I was asked this week about the Jaguars in the second half of the season, and it was based on two better performances in St. Louis and Denver, and my thought was, yeah, they may go to London and, you know, and get beat by San Francisco because the Niners are a contender, and the Jaguars may not be able to, you know, score enough points or, you know, stop their run or whatever it may be. But I thought, you know, coming back, they'll get a bye week, and then they'll get to the second half of the season. They'll have five of those eight games at home. And based on that, I thought they might be able to do something in the second half of the season. Based on today, I don't know what to think. Any thoughts on what the second half of the season might mean for this football team?
Well, I think they'll get better, and I think you'll see some moments that you feel good about. I still think they're going to win. They're going to win a game or two. I don't see them not winning. So, listen, they had the toughest schedule in the NFL for the first half of the year. It was difficult, and yep. It doesn't get easier next week. But the back half of the schedule, there's some more winnable games. It's a little bit easier as far as the teams they face with the records that those teams have. So I still think it'll get better, and I think this team will continue to work to get better.
All right, folks, we'll sign off from the broadcast booth. The next time you hear from us, we will be in London tomorrow night. The Jaguars will have Jaguars Monday. Pete Prisco will be there with Jeremy Ratliff. We'll have some different guests in there. But we will not join you until we have the Gus Bradley Show and Jaguars Thursday from the team hotel out in the countryside in England. And so I want to thank Brent Martineau for his efforts on the field today. Beautiful day for him to get that done. Scott Kushner, you know, you don't know how many times he wants to hit us on the back of the head and say, shut up, I got to get to a commercial break. But he does a terrific job, and we certainly appreciate him. Our producer is the producer. We just call him Joe, folks. You know him as Joe Fortunato. And so for Tony Buscelli and Jeff Loggeman, I will sign it off from here and hand it off to JP and Marco and Jay Gray and Linda Fortunato and the entire crew downstairs. You're in good hands, and I'm sure you've got some thoughts. We'll hear those next on the postgame show. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Jaguars Radio Network. Good night, everybody.
Jaguars postgame rolls along from the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Final score, San Diego 24, Jacksonville 6. J.P. Shadrick with you. Marco Coleman alongside. Mm-hmm. Gus Bradley just told the media in the postgame media access, quote, I just did a bad job today getting our team ready, end quote. That was his quote just now to the folks in the press room as the Jags fall to 0-7. And they have still failed to score a touchdown at home this year. Marco, where do you start with this game?
It's really tough. You know, it was so many areas that continued to be deficient. When you talk about last week and you thought there was some progression taking place. It was a step back, you know, specifically defensively. You figure as they made turnovers last week. No turnovers. Matter of fact, they only had two negative plays, one sack and one tackle for loss. Yeah. If you're going to play teams like this in order to get off the field, they had 62% of the time San Diego had the ball versus 38. You got to make big plays. You got to cause negative plays. And they only got two in this game. And a team like San Diego, that's how you're going to get yourself off the field.
You know what this reminded me of was last season's game. I don't want to compare seasons. Of course, you don't want to do that around here. But last season's Houston game here, where Houston just pounded the ball, killed a lot of clock, and came away. It wasn't a blowout game, but it was a game pretty similar to this, if I remember right.
But this game, it was about the short passing game. There wasn't a lot of big plays on the part of San Diego. They just methodically went down the field. And one of the things more aggressive in the defensive play calling, I don't think that the talent level is such that you can just line up four guys and just say, just go get it. I think that front seven has to take on a bigger onus because that's where you have the most of the experience and being able to help the defense and putting them in situations where they can be more aggressive and make some big plays. You know, you're leaving a lot of onus on that young secondary by not getting more pressure, probably bringing more people. I think even allowing some of those young defensive backs, the safeties, Cyprian and Evans, to probably blitz more as opposed to coverage, giving them an opportunity to take advantage of those type of skills. Because you leave them back in that secondary, they're young, and, you know, a guy like Rivers, you know, Manning, they're taking advantage of it, you know. You know, it was obvious that the game plan for San Diego outmatched the defensive game plan for the Jags today.
Time for the Comcast Xfinity Lightning Fast Questions of the Game. Number one, Marco, what is it about this offense that can't get into the end zone? Why is it?
Well, they get down there and it's focus. You figure all of a sudden the miscues. You start getting sacks. You start getting penalties. These are the plays that end up taking them from being in the red zone to now all of a sudden completely out of field goal position. And that continues to happen. That's why, you know, right now I think they're the top of the league as far as not getting into the end zone. You know, they're moving the ball, you know, all game long. You saw it. But then they get in, it's like a big lap. Something happens. Penalty, and that's, you know, I can't even say maturity because you look along the offensive line, experience, quarterback, experience. Hey, got to get something done.
I don't know what that is. Well, new you people have to find out.
Yeah, it's, they're still shaking this thing up. You still got, you know, new faces.
All right.
New faces.
Number two, the Jags are, what, sixth in the league in opponents' time of possession and lots of third down conversions for the opponents. How does the defense get off the field, Mark?
Well, they got to make some plays. I mean, you know, you figure last week against Denver, the thing was they got the fumble returns. You got the interception by Paz. You know, you figure those are the plays that get you off the field. And being more aggressive in the play calling. Babbage doesn't call a lot of blitz, so I think you're sitting on your heels allowing the offense to dictate what's going to take place. You're not moving and changing the coverage a whole lot, which I'm sure is because of the young secondary. But these good quarterbacks, you can't just sit in one coverage or give them pretty much what they're going to see and expect them not to take advantage of it.
Finally, Temple, the top pass rushers for the Chargers, did not play today, including Jarrett Johnson. He was a scratch, but the Jags allowed six sacks today. Why such a step backwards in pass protection?
Well, you know, you got those two tackles that are, you know, backups. And offensive line-wise, I mean, they haven't done a bad job, but Henny just doesn't have any ability to evade the rush. You look at what Rivers was able to do. He didn't just stand in the pocket all the time and just wait for the rush to get to him. The Jags actually, you know, they got penetration and things of that nature, so they moved him off the spot, and he moved in order to get himself in a position where he can make a good, clean throw. Henny just stays in the pocket. He's not athletic enough to move around. That's why he has those batted balls. He can't get himself into where he can get a better throwing lane. I think he's as much of a problem with the sacks as the offensive line, if not more.
Those are the Comcast Xfinity Lightning Fast questions and answers of the game. 24-6, the final score. The Chargers over the Jaguars. We'll come back in a moment and listen through the highlights from this one. Not many for the Jags today as they fall to the Chargers in Week 7. 24-6, the final score. The Jags are 0-7, headed to London. More after this on Jaguars Radio.
This portion of Jaguars postgame is brought to you by Brooks Rehabilitation, UL Knowledge Services, Eiselborn Chiropractic and Sports Medicine, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank. Jaguars postgame continues right now.
Back inside the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, unhappy final in Week 7. The Chargers 24 and the Jaguars 6. Chargers are now 4-3. The Jaguars fall to 0-7. They'll hop on the plane tomorrow, head across the Atlantic,
and arrive in London early Tuesday morning there. Let's take a listen now to the Metro PCS Sexton summary, the scoring summary from today's game. And I tell you what, the Chargers really set the tone in the opening drive of this game. Phillip Rivers, very efficient, mixed the run with the pass. They go 13 plays, 80 yards in 7.5 minutes, and cap it off with a 2-yard touchdown run from Woodhead.
Here's Vincent Brown. He goes to the left side. That's where Antonio Gates is. Here's the handoff to Woodhead, and he's in for the touchdown, San Diego.
7-0 Chargers after the extra point. Ensuing drive, Mercedes Lewis had a 31-yard reception. He was back, but the back-to-back sacks after that killed the drive. The Jags had to punt away. Marks had a sack for the Jags on the next drive, but then an unsportsmanlike conduct negated what would have been a 3rd-and-32 play. Chargers drive down the field again. It ends up being a 10-play, 80-yard drive. This time it's Rivers to Royal.
Gates, the tight end, lines up left outside DJ Fluker. Short shotgun for Phillip Rivers. Looks at the two safeties back deep, hands the ball up. No, it's play action. Steps, turns, pumps now, turns and throws to Eddie Royal, who's got it at the 5, and he lunges for a touchdown for San Diego.
14-0. That play was reviewed and upheld. Touchdown Chargers, 14-0 in 2 drives. Boy, and not much to do for the Jaguars. Next drive for the Jags, though, they go 18 plays, 66 yards, and over 7.5 minutes. Scobie from 30 yards out makes it 14-3.
Here's a 30-yard field goal attempt for Josh Scobie. The snap, the placement, the kick all up in the way, and good.
One of the bright spots for the Jaguars today came at the very end of the first half. At this point, Rivers was 14-14 in this game. Perfect on the day. Then had his first incompletion on the third drive for the Chargers. They go 12 plays, 79 yards, but Rivers unable to get it into the end zone before the end of the half. Tries to rush up the middle. He falls short.
Takes the snap, drops to throw, has some time. Now he's going to run.
If he's no good, then the clock is out.
He didn't get it.
He
didn't get it. Rivers didn't get in. What a stand by the Jaguars defense.
Jaguars stop him short at the end of the half. It was a 14-3 halftime score. Jaguars open the second half with the ball. They go 3 and out, punt it away, and then San Diego. They had a Gates fumble, the challenge no good. They drove down the field 10 plays again, this time 94 yards, and it's a 20-yard field goal.
Here's the gift, 3 points from Walt Coleman to the Chargers.
Well, I don't get that, and Gus Bradley, I'm sure, is going to want an explanation from Walt Coleman on this one.
10 plays, 79 yards, 17-3 the final score. Scobie hit a 23-yarder to make it 17-6. The Jags bogged down inside the red zone. Ensuing drive, though, the Chargers put it away. They go a long way down the field again. Another 10-play drive. This one eats up 84 yards. Matthews caps off a big day for San Diego.
Royal slides in motion, lines up in the wing. Here's an inside handoff, and Ryan Matthews has a touchdown.
Boy, that was easy. Just off tackle right.
23-6.
Make it 24-6 with the extra point. They would go 3 and out the rest of the day. The Jags 3 and out, turnover on downs, an interception, another turnover and downs. Couldn't do much offensively all day. And the final score, San Diego 24, Jacksonville 6. With no signed contracts, Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself. Jags are 0-7, headed to London next week to face San Francisco. The Chargers above 500 now with a 4-3 record, back-to-back wins for San Diego. When we come back, Marco rejoins us. We'll break down this ballgame a little more. 24-6 Chargers on Jaguars Radio. Portion of Jaguars postgame presented by Geico. Putting a winning lineup together is tough. Getting a quote from Geico is not. Visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO or contact your local Geico office today. Welcome back inside the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Jaguars postgame rolls along. JP Shadrick with you. Marco Coleman alongside. Okay, Marco, it's a 24-6 final. The Jags offense struggled throughout the day. The defense couldn't get off the field. What positive comes out of the game? What are some bright spots of this game? Let's uplift some folks.
Well, you figure the play of Brown. You know, he came out 5 catches, 120 yards, you know, having a big play to get him moving down the field. You got to, you know, be pleased about that. Really, the young wide receiving core, you know, did a lot of – the passes were very short throughout the day. And, of course, it's obvious that they didn't want to allow Henny to take too much responsibility in the way this game was going to go with these short passes. And it got the hands into these young wide receivers that can make plays after the catch. Shorts, Brown, Blackman, these guys are outstanding in with those short passes, those wide receiver screens and things of that nature, and being able to make plays after the catch. I think that's a real positive. And once you get a quarterback and even a running game that can take a lot more pressure off of those guys and create more open space, it's going to be significant in what the offense will be able to do.
Following some of the quotes coming out of the postgame locker room on Twitter right now, Mark Long reporting from the AP that wide receiver Cecil Shorts III said he was near tears after a 2-touchdown drop performance today. You got to make catches in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be consistent. That would be the thing, too. These young guys, they're young at the same time,
he's
too.
He's a third-year guy, and he's still young.
Yeah, he's still young. I mean, the upside is outstanding, man. You have to look at the components that are going to be changed out as this thing continues to go on, and the maturation. Each one of these games, this loss even, they got to take all these things and use them as a building block. It's not all negative in when you're talking about rebuilding. This is an experience that, hey, you can look back and recognize, I don't want to feel this way again. So I'm not going to drop the ball in the end zone. If I'm Mercedes Lewis, my team needs me now that I'm back in the game, and a ball in the end zone, I'm 6'9", and the guy is 5'11", I got to make that catch. Those are the type of plays that they're going to have to take a look at and decide what type of team they want to be and make those big plays. They have enough guys on this team that have experience to make plays, to not have to come through games and look this way, especially in that front seven on defense. That's where all the experience is. You figure all across that defensive line, these guys have been in enough NFL games to not allow to know you got to stop a drive. The linebacking core, you know, between Posluszny and Hayes, these guys have some experience. You know, those guys got to make some plays, you know, not leaving it completely on those young guys. They have to do something. So, you know, as it continues to grow, we'll see the young guys evolve, and maybe some new older guys may need to be brought in.
Let's start with, I think I know where you're going to go with this, offensive player of the game.
That's got to be Brown. Yep. You know, you figure a big play for him coming back after his, second game now back. And so now that receiving core is really good. And the potential, once you get a legitimately consistent quarterback, you got to like what you're going to see in the potential of what can go on. But, again, I heard a coach say potential would get him fired. So they need you to start making this stuff happen right now as soon as possible.
Defensive player of the game.
That's tough to find.
No, real tough.
Oh, it's real tough to find. I mean, as a unit, they played – it wasn't what good. And, I mean, I think you even have to throw the defensive coordinator in that because of what he allowed Rivers to do. He was never really harassed or made it more difficult for him. The quarterbacks in this league, unless you have four horses on that defensive line, which they don't have. They don't have a dominant player on the defensive line. You're going to have to do some things to make it a little more difficult for them to be able to make plays. And I understand with the young secondary, you don't want to make it too complicated for them to allow them to be able to make a play. But if you're really trying to get a win, you got to turn up the complexity of the defense to not make it as easy as Sunday for these quarterbacks.
That's right. Rivers was sacked one time, by the way. Cedric Marks got it. Only three hurries for this Jaguars defense today. It's not going
to
cut it.
Yeah, you got to bring some people. You got to. I mean, you have, and I didn't see this game like the Denver game where they just kind of let it all hang out, even offensively. You know, they came into the game, hey, we don't have a chance against the Denver Broncos, and they just said, let's just play with our hair on fire. That wasn't the case. I think at 0-6, you know, you got to play that way every week. You have to. You know, that's from play calling and the effort by the players. It's nothing to lose at this point in time. Let it all hang out. Don't get tight just because you're playing a team that doesn't have the reputation of the Denver Broncos.
When we come back, we'll break down the statistics from this game, see what stands out for the Jags. A lot stands out for San Diego. A final in week 7. 24-6, the Chargers over the Jaguars. Jags fall to 0-7. Chargers are now 4-3. More Jaguars postgame after this on Jaguars Radio. This portion of Jaguars postgame presented by Gate. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today on your way home. The final score at Everbank Field, week 7. Chargers over the Jaguars 24-6. Welcome back inside the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. JP Shadrick with Marco Coleman. Let's go through the stats, Marco. It is not a pretty sight in some areas today, and we've talked about it throughout the postgame already, but the
Real key today was San Diego's long drives. They maintained possession. They kept moving the chains, long, sustained drives. They finished with over 37 minutes of possession today. And I think most, if not all, of their drives were double-digit plays, at least until the last three and outs of the day. In fact, all the scoring drives were 10 plays or more.
Yeah, you figure
that's where it starts.
Yeah, you figure when you're able to hold the ball for that long of a time, it's not big plays. That's mean. That's one good thing that you could probably say that the defense was able to do was hold them from making those, a lot of those big, large 25, 30, 40-yard plays. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you got to make a play in order to get teams off the field. You know, defensively, no plays made, only two losses of four negative yards. You figure the one sack and one tackle for a loss. In NFL, you got to make plays behind the line of scrimmage in order to make it difficult. Matter of fact, in the penalties. When they did stop them, it was something that was done. You figure San Diego had a second and 20. They got that, got out of that. A second and 35 and got that. I mean, large gains that they were able to methodically move after being them make trying to kill themselves, but they're, sure, they're creating their own penalties. So defensively, no plays made.
Let's go through some of the individual stats. So rushing today, as a team, only 78 yards on the ground. That didn't really improve. Mojo, 9 carries, 37 yards. Forsett, 2 for 19. Robinson had 1 for 9. Todman, 1 for 8. Henny, 4 for 5. But the run game took a step back today.
It did, but I think Maurice Jones-Drew really looked good running the ball.
Yep.
When he did run, he pounded it in there, kept those legs driving, and he fell forward every time. He ran with a guy on a mission. I think that he didn't have a lot of opportunities to run the ball, of course, once you get back. You know, and they used the short passing game, I think, as opposed to just running it in order to get, you know, just those 3-4 yard gains. But I thought Mojo ran hard, and all the runners. They actually, when they did run the ball, I thought it was pretty effective. It didn't run a lot.
Receiving, Cecil Shorts, the third, targeted 13 times, had a couple of drop touchdowns, 8 receptions, 80 yards, long of 22 today. Justin Blackman off that 14-reception outing last week, only 6 today, 58 yards. But Mike Brown, as we talked about earlier, 5 receptions, 120 yards, that's a career best. Good day for Brown, but, you know, got to make some more plays.
You got to make some plays. I didn't think Blackman looked 100%. You know, it was an opportunity there in one of those pass plays. He was covered by a number 90, Kaiser, and caught the pass. It was an out route. And once he caught the ball, he couldn't run. He couldn't leave Reisner. I mean, you figure the first couple of weeks, he was catching balls and leaving secondary guys. But here's a linebacker. He didn't have the burst in order to get past him. You know, that groin and the hamstring. Mm-hmm. I think that may have been a reason why he didn't get as many balls. You know, you didn't see the explosiveness today out of him, and I think, you know, those injuries may have hindered him from being 100%.
Chad Henne today had his 11th 300-yard game in his career, but that's a little deceptive again. Most of those yards were late in the game, 318 yards, 23 of 36 passing, one interception later, rating of 80.6, sacked 6 times in the game. He's racking up 300-yard games, but it's trash time at the end, most of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and it's the sacks. He's a very sackable quarterback. I think he makes – unless it's a timing throw and he's, you know, so you can get that ball out of there. If it's time, he has to make a read, he makes it too slow, holds the ball too long. And then once there is some form of pressure, being able to evade the rush, having some type of ability to just move around in the pocket, he doesn't have that. You know, and that's the reason why there's getting these sacks. Man, it's more so him. The offensive line-wise, of course, they do have some issues there. But, you know, Henny's got to do better at being able to prevent the rush, because all these quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Rivers, you see these guys, they're getting forced, but what they're able to do is get themselves around in the pocket to evade those rushes. So the batted balls, you know, he can't move around and get a good throwing window.
A lot of those.
Yeah, so, I mean, Henny, you know, he gets the ball once he can throw, has the ability to throw, but a very sackable quarterback.
I'm going to ask you the question of the week coming up before we get off the air. So get ready for that. Some other stats for San Diego today, some highlights. Matthews on the ground, 21 carries, 110 yards, a touchdown, 5.2 per carry. Phillip Rivers, 22 of 26, very efficient, 285, a touchdown, a rating of 125.2. Gates, modest day-to-day, 6 receptions, 31 yards. Royal, 4 for 69, and a touchdown. Woodhead, 4 for 47. And the efficient San Diego Chargers come away with a 24-6 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars in Week 7. We'll come back with a look at the National Football League scoreboard. 24-6 the final, Chargers over the Jaguars. More Jaguars postgame after this on Jaguars Radio.
This portion of Jaguars postgame is presented by GEICO. GEICO has proudly supported the military for over 75 years. See how much GEICO's military discounts could save you. Go to GEICO.com, call 1-800-MILITARY, or contact your local GEICO agent today. Final score at Everbank Field in Week 7. Chargers over the Jaguars 24-6. Chargers are 4-3. Jaguars are 0-7. Let's look around the National Football League in Week 7. All early games final. Cam Newton had a touchdown pass today, 15 of 17 through the air, 204 yards as the Panthers beat the Rams 30-15. Redskins in a shootout today beat the Bears in Washington 45-41. Robert Griffin III with two touchdowns through the air, 298-yard game. Forte had three touchdowns on the ground for the Bears in the losing effort. Cowboys beat the Eagles, two second-half touchdowns for the Cowboys, 17-3 in Philly. Other finals today, an overtime game in New York. The Jets are now 4-3. They beat the Patriots in overtime, 30-27. A field goal in overtime gets it done for New York. A final in Miami, the Bills are now 3-4. They beat the Dolphins 23-21. In Detroit today, the Bengals over the Lions 27-24. In Atlanta, Falcons over the Bucks. Bucks are now 0-6. Falcons 2-4, a 31-23 final. Some other games in action. Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. Steelers lead the Ravens early second quarter at 7-3. Into the first quarter in Kansas City at Arrowhead, the Chiefs lead the Texans 7-3. At Lambeau Field in Green Bay, under four to play in the first quarter, Packers lead the Browns 14-0. Rodgers has a touchdown pass today. And in Nashville, the 49ers lead the Titans 3-0. That game is halfway through the second quarter. And, of course, the Niners will leave from there and head all the way over to London, as will the Jaguars. Final score today at Everbank Field. Again, the Chargers 24 and the Jaguars 6. We'll take a timeout and come back for the final segment of Jaguars postgame. Marco Coleman joins us for the final time. We'll get you ready for next week's game at Wembley Stadium in northwest London. The Niners and the Jags coming up next week. That's after this on the Jaguars Radio Network. This portion of Jaguars postgame is brought to you by PRI Productions. Final score for the final time from Everbank Field. Chargers over the Jaguars 24-6. Chargers are 4-3. Jaguars are 0-7. How do you improve now? This was a deflating afternoon for this Jaguars team, coming off a real positive effort, at least last week in Denver. The head coach said it himself after the game today. The effort wasn't there today. He said it.
I think it may be a time for this team to finally see the ugly side of Gus Bradley. I mean, I think up until this point he's been very patient with the players, the team. Now it's an opportunity for him to reprimand the team. You know, you figure even with your children, you know, you give them opportunities, but if they continue or they take steps back, at some point in time you have to be a little bit more stern. So I would look for the atmosphere not to be as jocal as it usually is, you know, but to kind of get a little tightness up for some reason, you know, at some point in time. And this time, you're going against a team that will embarrass them. The team doesn't want to be embarrassed, going out to London for the first time.
Yep.
So it's going to have to – whatever it's going to take as a coach to get some urgency spurred with this team, in which playing against the San Francisco 49ers, I don't think it's going to be a lot you have to do going against a team of this caliber.
Niners now lead 10-0 over the Titans. They had a couple of stumbles early in the season, but the San Francisco team obviously went to the Super Bowl last year. Very, very strong opponent next week.
Well, you know, it's one of the better teams in the NFL. I would look for them to also still be in the same position this year as they were last year with an opportunity to go back to the Super Bowl. And so, again, just like this week and last week, it's an opportunity for these young players to see playoff caliber teams live and in action, compete against them, to understand the tempo, to understand how they not make a lot of mistakes. Just watch how they go about their business. I mean, you're competing against them. You want to win. You want to be in awe. But you have to observe how they go about their business so that you can emulate at some point in time during your career the way that these guys go about it.
Marco, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you from across the pond next week.
Hey, you have a good time, buddy.
We'll be on air.
Some fish and chips. You know, bring some? Well, I don't bring none back. That's okay.
Noon Eastern time on the Jaguars Radio Network with Jaguars pregame next week from Wembley Stadium. Senior VP of Communications is Dan Edwards. Executive producer of Jags Radio, Mike Dorwart. Manager of Jags Radio, Joe Fortunato. Tim B., Linda Fortunato, and Ed Rocco are the producers. Jaguars pregame anchor Jeremy Ratliff. Jay Gray is the Jaguars pregame reporter. For Marco Coleman, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Vaselli, and Brian Sexton, this is J.P. Shadrick saying goodnight. Once again, the final score, Chargers 24, Jaguars 6 on the Jaguars Radio Network.